The 2024 NFL Draft heads to Detroit, and it's time to see who gets the job.
Caleb is a unique and special talent throwing the football.
And what sets them apart.
The Heisman Trophy winner is Jaden Daniels.
All of the greats were hired here.
What a throw by Mahomes.
See who gets the job.
Are you ready?
The 2024 NFL Draft begins Thursday, April 25th on ESPN, ABC, and NFL Network.
Welcome to NFL Live. Big day around the league. The trade deadline officially is passed as we speak. 4 p.m. Eastern right now. All the latest on the moves that were and weren't made coming with our reporters. And we begin with Adam Schefter. Adam, what's the headline right now?
Trade deadline has come and gone, and it looks as if there will be no big deals made today. We did have minor deals. We had the Isaiah Ford traded from Miami to the New England Patriots for a 7th-round pick. We had the Chiefs and Dolphins swap late-round picks for running back DeAndre Washington, but no big trades have come down, at least so far. We don't think any will happen. Meanwhile, Andy Dalton was placed on the reserve COVID-19 list today, which means he will not play Sunday against the Pittsburgh Steelers. That means the Dallas Cowboys either will have to turn to Cooper Rush or Ben DiNucci again, but it will not be Dalton. It will not be Dak Prescott, and that will be a difficult assignment against the Pittsburgh Steelers. And while Dalton's on the COVID-19 list, players now are being asked to wear masks at all times in the bench area. The league is tightening mask requirements across the league as it tries to fight off the pandemic affecting the rest of the country. That'll be the next step that the league takes, but it's going to ask players to be wearing masks more often.
Adam Schefter with us all show long. And hi, everybody. Good to see you. You just saw Adam. Diana Russini joining us momentarily with some news. On the trade deadline, the Packers, the Patriots, Dan Orlovsky there, Marcus Spears waving to the camera, Mina Kimes as well. Let's get right to it on this busy day. And I mentioned those Packers. They don't end up making a deal at the deadline. And Diana Russini's been all over this news. First of all, Diana, Will Fuller in the mix. Why did they not ultimately make a move to get Aaron Rodgers another weapon today?
It was definitely a split with the Green Bay Packers in terms of what direction they wanted to move here. There were some that were part of the football organization, at least the football side of this, that wanted to get Aaron Rodgers a wide receiver, Will Fuller from the Texans being one of those guys. But there were some decision makers here in the front office who did not believe or feel that they wanted to spend that money. They felt that Aaron Rodgers has enough weapons and is able to be as productive as he's been with the guys that they have on their roster at this point. So that's the offensive side of this, Laura. There's also a defensive component to this. We know that they have struggled all season long, stopping the run. I also know that there are people on this coaching staff that really tried to get this front office to make a move here, to get them some defensive players to help there. But as we see now, no moves were made for Green Bay.
As you were talking, Diana, and you'll be with us throughout this show as well, Mina Kimes, I'm watching your face, and as she was saying that the Packers didn't feel like they needed to add more weapons because maybe they felt like they had enough already on this team. What's your reaction to Diana's reporting of what the Packers didn't do here?
Well, I think they could have used help on both sides of the ball. We've talked a lot about the lack of wide receivers or playmakers, but defense has been even more of an issue for this Packers team. They rank 29th in Football Outsiders DVOA, which is an efficiency ranking. And this Sunday, their performance against Minnesota, Laura, much like Marcus Spears' outfit, reminds me of Dan Orlovsky's outfit. They're basically twins. It reminded me of the NFC Championship game. Because yet again, this defense got steamrolled. I mean, granted, Kirk Cousins threw it a few more times. Jimmy only threw it 6 times, but he didn't attempt a single pass or complete a single pass, rather, more than 10 yards. See, they're twins, guys. Look at that. It's uncanny. It didn't complete a single pass more than 10 yards downfield. We knew what this offense was going to do. They came in bad weather. They wanted to run the football, and Green Bay still couldn't stop them. This team has punted on the linebacker position, and we're seeing the effect of that year after year, and I'm surprised they haven't made more of an effort to address it.
I like that you're in defense, and I like how we're getting this day started off early on this show because I can tell it's going to be a good one. Listen, the addressing of the wide receiver spot is what everybody has been paying attention to, and I thought this team was fine honestly, Dan and Mina, when Lazard was playing at his level and they were waiting for Devontae to get back. But as soon as that injury happened, it was pushed to the forefront that they needed to try to get someone else in there to complement what Devontae does on the other side. We've seen them have their struggles. Aaron Rodgers is solely focused on Devontae and making plays and the guy that he trusts. Tonyan came in at tight end. Valdez Scantlin has not turned out to be a guy. He's had moments, ups and downs. But we were seeing Lazard transition into being a legit two and a guy that can make plays down the field based on what we watched him do in New Orleans in particular. But when that transpired, they should have been players in the field for a wide receiver. And for them in their organization to say they have a guy, they don't. They don't because they are not watching what we watching here.
Yeah, and just to reiterate Diana Russini's reporting, Dan, she's saying that some of the coaching staff said they wanted to make some moves and then others in the organization not on the same page. Let's go to the macro level here. Why do you think the Packers didn't make moves today?
Well, there's really only two reasons. One, if you're the general manager, you either think that you can't win the Super Bowl this year. You either think that your team cannot win the Super Bowl this year, or you think that you're closer than you really are. Because there's no way that Brian Gutekunst, their general manager, watches the same tape that I watch, that you guys watch, that everyone watches and goes, that's a Super Bowl contending football team. There's no way that you can do that and look at the defense and go, that defense is good enough to get a stop when we need him to get a stop. Especially against teams when playoff football comes into play and they very specifically will attack you. So that's my only reasoning to understand it. And listen, I want to address Diana's report that there's a different viewpoint between the coaching staff and front office. Do you know who knows the football team better than anybody? The coach. The general manager does not know the football team as well as the coach. The coach is in those meetings every single day, watching tape on their team every single day, watching that practice and grinding. And so if the coach takes a really, really, really good team and says, I need this one piece. I need this one piece for us to go be bona fide Super Bowl contenders. You know what you do? You get it done and you figure out later. You figure it out in 2021 when you're holding a Lombardi trophy. And that's why I'm so disappointed with Green Bay today.
Yeah, you think about Green Bay and the opportunity already having drafted Jordan Love and not getting a weapon, but then a chance maybe to get somebody in there right now and try to win, or maybe on the defensive side of the ball not doing it. It does make you raise questions, especially as we get closer to the postseason with this team. Their opponent Thursday, the 49ers, just a couple days away from that Week 9 matchup, and tough times for the 49ers just when it felt like they could hang on despite dealing with tons of injuries. The injuries reached a whole new level. Quarterback Jimmy G and tight end George Kittle both missing multiple weeks with injuries. Adam Schefter has reported very well could be that their seasons are over, but that's not the only issue in the game on Thursday. Tell us more about what the Packers are dealing with.
Well, you got it, Rutledge. Basically, the Packers are dealing with injuries. The 49ers are dealing with injuries. The Packers right now basically have had Jamal Williams be determined to be a close contact. So he cannot play. They've already lost A.J. Dillon. They don't know whether Aaron Jones can even play due to that calf injury. So their running backs on Thursday night right now could wind up being Dexter Williams and Tyler Irving. Those could be their running backs. As for the 49ers right now, they're in a situation where today they ruled out Tevin Coleman, who suffered an injury on Sunday against Seattle. They ruled out Deebo Samuel. George Kittle is out for the season. Jimmy Garoppolo is out for a minimum of 6 weeks and may need season-ending surgery. So there are a whole host of injuries that the 49ers are going through. These two teams have very few running backs left. The 49ers may start Jermichael Hasty, an undrafted free agent, and the Green Bay Packers may start Dexter Williams on Thursday Night Football this week.
We'll keep an eye on that. Maybe something for the fantasy people to pay attention to there as well. And by the way, even before the injuries to Jimmy G and George Kittle, San Fran, the highest cap value of players on IR this season of $54.2 million. Back to the trade deadline, Diana Russini reporting today that multiple teams who have called the Patriots about cornerback Stephon Gilmore told by New England they want a first-round pick and a player in exchange for Gilmore. He was a defensive player of the year last season, thus the high asking price. So, Diana, was it that asking price that ultimately led Gilmore to remaining in New England?
Yeah, I'm talking to someone in New England right now over text trying to figure out what happened, if there were was anyone even close to perhaps landing this, and it seems that no one was able to get to that very hefty price of the first-round draft pick along with the player. I did also speak to Stephon Gilmore this week leading up to it, trying to get an idea of how he felt about all this, because we know he's not really used to dealing with a New England team that is as bad as they are right now, and he had such a good attitude about all this, obviously open to whatever was going to be his destiny here. But I did get a sense that he wanted to stay in New England. As we know, he's got a great relationship with Bill Belichick and the rest of the guys on that team, but it seemed that the price tag for Gilmore was just a little too steep for other teams to get in on that.
All right, great stuff from Diana Russini all day long with the trade deadline. We appreciate you for joining our show here. Hey, the top three quarterbacks taken in the 2020 draft all have a win under their belt, but none may be more impressive than Joe Burrow's performance against a 5-1 Titans team this past Sunday. In fact, it looks like Burrow is starting to find his rhythm. In his last two games, he's posted an 81 QBR, has thrown 5 touchdowns to 1 interception, is completing 73% of his passes during that time. All those marks rank in the top 10 over the last 2 weeks, including his pressure percentage, which has dropped by 10% over that span. Makes you think, what if he gets some time behind that offensive line? Could be a really scary sight for opposing defenses. But Dan, you've watched a lot of Burrow all the way back from even his college days up until now.
I drool when I do it, actually.
You
now.
Do. We have to wipe off your mouth. But tell us what the tape shows you under all that drool.
Well, I mean, there's so many things about Joe Burrow's game. Every week I'm trying to figure out adjectives that I want to use to describe his football, his play. I'd say the first thing, he's just got this incredible veteran feel for what the play is going to need. All right, so this is 2nd and 14 against the game against the Titans. It's a cover 6 defense, but I really want everyone to focus on this inside triangle between those three defenders and really the number 3 receiver, Tyler Boyd, right there, because it's an outstanding job by Joe Burrow. Now, playing against this cover 6 defense, you've got to do 2 things as a quarterback. You, with your vision, you've got to hold that backside linebacker because you want to keep him kind of right there. And then you also need to see this linebacker. I told you Boyd is right here, right? This linebacker can do 2 things. He can go back vertical, or he can drive underneath the second defender. And that's paramount. So you have to see both those defenders at the same time. Now, first of all, watch what Joe Burrow does when he gets the snap. Okay, I love this. He's got his vision right there. He's holding that linebacker, knowing that's one of the guys that he has to make sure stay there. I'm going to open up a window. And now he's got to get his vision on this backer, right? I told you that backer could do 1 of 2 things, go back or go lateral. Now, Joe Burrow is going to do a great job of holding that linebacker and then coming back and realizing, okay, that guy's going to undercut. Now the ball needs to go to Boyd. But this is the NFL. You better throw on time before defenders close. Check this out by Joe Burrow. That ball is coming out of his hands. I want everyone to see. He is now getting that ball released. And Boyd is just starting to drop his hips. He still has vision that way. He's not even looking back at Joe Burrow. Get the ball out on time and then talk about ball placement, because that safety's driving and that linebacker's driving. Throw it on his left shoulder to protect him, and that's just ridiculous feel. But this play is absolutely special. You have man-to-man coverage across the board, right? So as a quarterback, you know, I got to give these guys some time to work. It's going to take a little bit. 2 things that are absolutely spectacular by Joe Burrow. Everyone look, it's 3rd and 9 late in this football game. First of all, he's going to get pressure off the edge. This is clinical, right? Because this defender is going to climb the top of the pocket. Now, Joe Burrow has to do 2 things. He has to dip his shoulder with the football, dip and climb the pocket, and then swipe the ball across his chest to protect it. Watch how good this is by Joe Burrow. Okay, dip, swipe, and protect it. Now, look at his vision. In the middle of absolute chaos, he's keeping his eyes downfield. Now, he wants Boyd again. Boyd, this is assault. This is assault. This should be a flag. He's getting absolutely whooped. This is what I talk about. This is Aaron Rodgers and Russell Wilson type feel. Ball's going to come out. Okay, the ball is no longer in Joe Burrow's hands. It's actually right here. This is the football. Boyd has no idea the ball's coming. I want everyone to focus on the tempo of the ball, because he does this on purpose. Look at the loft, right? He took a little bit of loft on that ball because he knows he's getting beat up. And then Boyd just snaps his head. This is called an absolutely perfect throw. He has no choice but to catch it, because where the ball is placed in the tempo on it, in a conversion. That's that uncoachable feel that you really just, it's hard to find the adjective to describe it. I would say this. There is not a young quarterback in the NFL that I would take outside of Patrick Mahomes over Joe Burrow. He's that good.
Whoa. Whoa.
There is not a young quarterback in the NFL I would take outside of Patrick Mahomes over Joe Burrow already.
Mina, he doubled down. He's taken Joe Burrow. Other than Patrick Mahomes. Mina, go ahead. What do you think?
First of all, this is the difference between me and Orlovsky. I texted that Boyd catch to our group text and said, wow, look at Tyler Boyd. Of course, Dan's like, look at Joe Burrow. But putting a pin in that, look, listen, man, I love Joe Burrow. He's my favorite in the class. He's been awesome, okay? He's so smart, so good on the short, intermediate stuff. Pocket presence is through the roof. But the notion that you would take him over the human magician, Deshaun Watson, who's just 2 years older than Burrow, is bananas, okay? I'm already having a tense day, and I feel like you're trying to get my blood pressure up. Deshaun Watson, based on what they've done so far, has outperformed Burrow in just about every respect statistically, but here's one that stands out and I think really matters. On 15-yard plus throws this season, Joe Burrow has a 39% completion percentage. Deshaun Watson has a 63% completion percentage because his arm is significantly better than Joe Burrow's. I love Joe Burrow. Please don't hear this as a dig on Burrow. Deshaun Watson is just that good. Marcus, I know you agree with me.
Come on. Come on, my sport coat brother.
100% I agree with you, Mina. But see, this is what Dan does.
What a front runner.
And he actually got my blood pressure up today. I've gotten used to hearing some of the stuff that comes out of his brain and not really reacting, because I know sometimes he just poking the bear.
Oh, really?
Yes, I'm a literal bear, and he's poking me. Joe Burrow has played 8 games. 8.
I don't care.
And Deshaun Watson is giving you this entire sample size.
Thank you.
Of greatness. Not just good. He's giving you all of the moments.
Agreed.
You just pointed out with Joe Burrow. You can go back and see those moments with Deshaun Watson. And now Joe Burrow is the second best young quarterback in the NFL because you've seen him play 8 times. Man, come on, man. Come on, man.
No. Here's my thing. And this is why I'm confident in saying that. Listen, I love Deshaun Watson too. Like, this is not a bash on Deshaun Watson thing. But the way Joe Burrow plays.
Neither one of them.
No. The rhythm and the feel that he has is uncoachable. Like, it is. I understand that you guys are saying Deshaun Watson is a more powerful player. Like, he's the better kind of jaw-dropping plays type player. But Joe Burrow can do things that Deshaun can't. Like, the way that he can operate, Deshaun doesn't have that in his game right now. Now, there might be some stuff that Deshaun could do athletically too, but he can operate like in a more rhythmic play or in a more rhythmic place that creates those big plays. And I'll say this one last thing, Mina. He makes every play work. Like, Joe Burrow will make every play work. There's plays where the play call happens and the defense wins. And Joe Burrow makes it work. We say that about Russell Wilson, Aaron Rodgers. He makes it work. That's the difference.
Mina, go. You were raising your hand.
Oh.
No, you know what's uncoachable? A deep ball, Dan. A deep ball like the one Deshaun Watson has. And the craziest part is I didn't even talk about Deshaun Watson's legs. Okay, I didn't even bring that into
sure.
it, but if we want to throw that into it as well.
Don't sleep on Joe Burrow's legs.
Good night.
You've turned Marcus into the headless horseman.
No,
what's going on?
He's Beavis and Butthead right
killing
now.
Killing us, man.
Oh, man.
I can't with this guy. I cannot with this guy, man.
What?
I cannot.
Hey, Marcus.
He's on this tangent because Joe Burrow is balling. Look, nobody on this show loves Joe Burrow more than I love Joe Burrow. But you're not about to sit on this show and say he the second best young quarterback in the NFL.
We
done watched Deshaun Watson literally carry the Houston Texans in spite of Bill O'Brien.
This is what I said.
I can't believe
this.
You don't
want to
match him anymore.
I would take him. And I'm going to use your line. If you don't like it, make your own damn list. But I would take him over anybody but Patrick Mahomes.
All right, Marcus, put your jacket back on top of your head because that was the funniest thing I've seen all day.
Swimsuit? Check. Sunscreen? Check. Phone charger? Check. Don't forget to pack the 5-Hour Energy. It fits great in a pocket or carry-on, and the alert feeling will help you arrive ready for anything. Now get 20% off when you use code 5HETRAVEL at 5HOURENERGY.com. Expires April 30th. One-time use only. Not valid with other discounts. Remember, visit 5HOURENERGY.com and use code 5HETRAVEL to save 20%.
Hi, this is ESPN's Mike Greenberg, and ESPN Bet is ready to take you through all the biggest sports moments this spring. The official sports book of ESPN has exclusive offers and markets from Scott Van Pelt, Stephen A. Smith, and me. From the upcoming draft, the playoff intensity, and finally getting out to the ballpark, there's no better time for sports fans. Sign up today, and new users get $100 in bonus bets for making any sportsbook bet. Download ESPN Bet today. What a play.
Must be 21 plus and present in select states. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply. See app for details.
We're back on NFL Live. Adam Schefter back with us. And earlier in the show, you told us the Cowboys will be without quarterback Andy Dalton due to being placed on the reserve COVID-19 list. Now the Ravens dealing with the adjustments due to the virus. What can you tell us about what's going on with the Ravens?
Laura, seven players have been deemed in close contact with Marlon Humphrey, who tested positive for the virus. They obviously will not practice there. Those seven Ravens are Matthew Judon, Patrick Queen, Deshaun Elliott, L.J. Fort, Malik Harrison, Terrell Bonds, Tyus Bowser. And so they can't practice this week, but they can play Sunday if they pass 5 days of testing, a challenging week for Baltimore. Meanwhile, Broncos general manager John Elway and team executive Joe Ellis both tested positive for COVID-19, according to the team. They're both at home. Coincidence that they both got it, were not around each other, but now are at home trying to take care of what goes on there right now. Obviously a major issue at this point in time for the Denver Broncos.
Adam Schefter with us for the rest of the show. You'll be back with us in a bit. And so let's talk about the trade deadline, guys. Now, it has passed. How about a contender that should have made a move? We start with you, Marcus Spears.
Yes, it should have been the Baltimore Ravens looking for a wide receiver. Listen. I know Lamar Jackson is the calling card to what they want to do offensively. I know they can run the football with the best of them. I know this defense is elite. But I'm looking for Lamar Jackson, a weapon on the outside, to create a one-on-one situation where he can have a safety valve like every other contender that's trying to win a Super Bowl has.
I think the Buffalo Bills needed to go get some secondary help. This is a team that should win its division, but it's got to be thinking longer than that and past that. This is a team that should make some noise in the playoffs. And the offense has certainly hit a rough spot, but it'll get better and it'll get more continuity. But their back end has not been good enough. And you're going to have to slow down passing games to win in the playoffs in the AFC this year. They need to go get secondary help.
So the Titans did get secondary help, but they did not address their pass rush, which has been generating pressure at the lowest rate in the NFL. Part of the reason Joe Burrow looked like, as Dan Orlovsky might say, the greatest quarterback in the history of football last week is they didn't pressure him at all. I was hoping they would get a Ryan Kerrigan or an Alden Smith, but alas, they did not bolster their front seven.
A lot of quarterbacks are the greatest in all time for Dan Orlovsky. How about the one last night on Monday Night Football, Tom Brady, the GOAT. Hey, listen, it was his 25th appearance on Monday Night Football against the Giants, and he starts out smiling. He's kind of saying hey to everybody, but not so much with the smiles after a slow first quarter sacked by Leonard Williams.
And this was part of the first quarter, for first half frustrations, really. Way too many third and longs, and that Giants defensive line is way better than people think. The Buccaneers offense was stagnant.
Yeah, they trailed 14-6 at halftime, third quarter, and Brady to Gronk.
This is the back end of a great drive, and you just get that little hardball play action fake, and Gronk leaks right behind that Giants second level.
Fourth quarter, Giants up 17-15 in Bucs territory and intercepted Daniel Jones.
This is a panic throw. It's second and five. You got points there. All you have to do is throw that ball away, throw it into the ground. That is the moment of panic that defined the night for Daniel Jones. And then this is right after the drive. A great throw by Tom Brady, Mike Evans, to the back pylon. Mina's favorite route, a goal line fade.
A minute 25 left in the fourth. After a Bucs field goal, the Giants are down. And how about Jones buying time there to Sterling Shepard?
Not only buying time, Laura, but like keeping his eyes downfield, and Sterling Shepard just finding that zone, that soft spot. And then this is the Danny Dimes throw. This is outstanding. He sees the safety drift to the hash. You throw it right up over to the defender, only where 15 GT can go get it. Beautiful job by Daniel Jones.
Blaine Gabbert, disbelief because the Giants are within 2 points. They try for the conversion, but not able to get it. Deion Lewis not able to get that there. The pass is broken up. Antoine Winfield Jr. gets there just as the ball arrives. And Danny Dimes right there. The Bucs hang on to win that one. And Marcus, all night long, it felt like this Bucs team just was flat. You think they kind of went into this game thinking, all right, we got the Saints next week. We're not that focused on this Giants team that we're much better than.
Yeah, and as much as we like to approach it as pros and think that we are putting the same type of mentality and psychological part of the game into every game, we're just not. That's not the truth. I played in the league 9 years. Every game wasn't created the same. You want to believe that it is, But I'm sure the Bucks looked at the New York Giants and they've been hearing about how bad they are in the NFC East, and they've lost some guys on the offensive line. So this defense wanted to take more chances. And I got to give the Giants credit. They played well. Jason Garrett had a great plan. Unfortunately, I knew at some point Daniel Jones would give Tampa the ball and give them a few extra possessions, and that's what it took. But I looked at this offense, very vanilla, no juice, no energy, compared to when we last saw them against Green Bay. It was a whole different animal. So, look, I'm not making an excuse for the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, but the way they played, how they call plays, the lethargic attitude that they had until they start getting the ball to their playmakers lended me to believe that they really wasn't into that game until it was like red alert.
Yeah, but Marcus, I actually take more from that game and think more highly of the Bucs than I would have if they had the blowout victory that I expected. Because here's the thing, like, to be a championship team, you got to have championship medal. And sometimes you got to win the game that you could point back to and say, we shouldn't have won that game. A couple weeks ago, Bruce Arians said after the Chargers game, you know what, last year we would have lost that football game. Nah, man, you were down 24-7. You're going to lose a lot of games down 24-7. This was the game that last year you would have lost because you didn't adjust like you did last night, and Tom Brady didn't turn the football over like Jameis would have done last year. And it was about getting Rob Gronkowski the ball, specifically in that play-action game in the second half. They got into a rhythm. They protected the quarterback. They were way more efficient on first down. They had to go grind out that victory, right? Like, they weren't going to just go blow the Giants out. But they had to figure out a way to grind out a win when they didn't have their A game. And to at the moment go, all right, the play needs to get made now. Like, this is the time you have to go make the play. And they did that. And that's why I actually look at the team and go, that was a really impressive road win, more than 31-7 victory.
Mina, there was one thing that Tom Brady does particularly well that the coaching staff really didn't exploit in the first half last night. What is that?
Yeah. Play action, Laura. Mm. So there were a few things I was screaming at the television in the first half. Stop running the ball on first down. Give the ball to Rob Gronkowski. And let's see some more play action passes. Because when Tom Brady has thrown out of play action, he's been excellent this year. Yeah. That's actually the third highest completion percentage in the league. And yet, despite these splits, the Bucs have used it amongst the lowest rates in the NFL, which is, of course, a stark contrast to New England. Last night, in the second half, he used it on 43% of his throws. Both of those passing touchdowns were off of play action. You saw it was working, and I wonder if, perhaps going forward, this offense might lean on play action a bit more heavily, even when they get Chris Godwin and Antonio Brown back.
Yeah, you got to think that Brady would at least be advocating for that. And you mentioned Chris Godwin and Antonio Brown. Let's bring Adam back in. Antonio Brown, you just tweeted about it. Shefty officially activated by this Bucs team. What should we expect his role to be this week and then on Sunday?
Bruce Arians talked about it today, Laura. He said basically that Antonio Brown is not going to play 60 plays on Sunday night against the New Orleans Saints. It will all depend on the flow of the game. Might be 10 plays, might be 30 plays. Depends on how much success he has. My sense would be, I've seen these things unfold before, it'll be closer to 30 than it is 10, but it will depend on the flow of the game. And right now, officially, he is active, and they've moved in that direction, so he will is expected to make his Buccaneers debut on Sunday night.
Yeah, let's turn to the other team in that game, the Saints. Do you think we could see Saints wide receiver Michael Thomas back this week finally for Drew Brees?
That is the question that has come up every single week in recent weeks. And remember, he suffered the high ankle sprain in week one. He suffered a grade one hamstring strain a couple of weeks ago that was expected to sideline him 1 to 2 weeks. We're beyond that 1 to 2 week period. From a physical standpoint, there should not be any issues with Michael Thomas being out there. But this is not just a physical issue situation in New Orleans. This is more complex and layered due to the fact that he had the fight with the teammate. He was disrespectful to the coaching staff. They wanted apologies. He was very proud and was hesitant to do that. There is a whole lot going on here. So we've got the physical questions about Michael Thomas's recovery. We've got his feelings being hurt. And so we are now entering week 9. Michael Thomas has not played since week 1. I think it has less to do with the physical injuries than anything else. But listen, it's about that time for him to get out there and play. This team needs him. He needs them. They need each other. Time to make it happen.
Yeah, it's really interesting. Just the layers to this Michael Thomas situation, to your point, Shefty, a lot more to it than maybe meets the eye. The Bears have lost two straight games after starting the season 5-1, leaving many to wonder if the switch to Nick Foles was the right decision. Let me tell you what I'm talking about. Since becoming the starter in week 4, Foles has recorded a 49 total QBR. That's fifth worst in the league over that span. A big reason for that has been Foles' inability to take care of the ball. He's thrown 6 interceptions since becoming the starter, including at least one in each of his 5 starts. But it may not all be Foles' fault, so this is important. Chicago has posted the 5th worst pass block win rate since week 4, sustaining blocks for 2.5 seconds just 47% of the time. In case you're not sure, that's real bad. So, Dan, as you see those numbers and you hear about how it's been for Foles with this Bears offense, what do you make of it all?
It's time to go back to Mitchell Trubisky. You know, first of all, if you got a playoff-caliber defense, which the Chicago Bears do, the number one job is to not give the game away. Don't turn the football over. Value it. Nick Foles has not done that. Now, if you go to Mitchell, he's got to make these 2 or 3 plays that Nick Foles has been willing and able to do. Push the football downfield. You see a big throw to Mooney. You see him giving Allen Robinson at least a chance to go make that diving catch. You've got to be able to make these throws if you're Mitchell Trubisky. Hang in the pocket and hit that crosser in the window. But he can do this. Like, he can help that bad offensive line that you just talked about. Down in the red zone, no one's there. Go create. You don't have to force the ball to the only pass-catching option that's there. How about getting outside the pocket? When protection breaks down and you've got to go make a play with your feet, that sack cannot happen because of Mitchell Trubisky. He's going to give you the opportunity to do that stuff. Here's the thing with Matt Nagy. Your job as a coach is not to find players that fit into your system. Your job as the coach is to figure out ways to allow players to excel in your system and adjust your system around their skill set. I don't want to hear anymore that you want to run the Chiefs system. That's not your job. Your job is to take the talent of the players that you have and get them to be as good as they possibly can. Mitchell Trubisky gives them the best option. He will cover up the 2 main deficiencies they have: a poor offensive line because of his athleticism and an average skill group because of his athleticism. Go back to Mitchell Trubisky.
This feels a little bit like when your friend breaks up with someone, everyone's like, thank you, finally. And then they start dating again and it's tough. And they're like, maybe that old guy wasn't that bad. I am here, Dan, to be the rational voice in the room to remind you, yes, he was that bad. Okay, and not, I mean, he's a lovely person.
He was.
He's a lovely person. But he was one of the worst quarterbacks in the NFL by any measure. And they won a few games in the beginning of the season because Mitch Trubisky got to play the 27th best defenses in the league. Nick Foles has played the 10th best by ESPN's FPI rating, so competition matters. But he's not a good quarterback. They know what they have in him at this point. And I hear what you're saying about how potentially his athleticism could allow them to compensate for some of their pass protection issues. I hear you, and I agree with you. That's something Matt Nagy could have, should have, would have taken advantage of. But Mitch Trubisky was also significantly worse than Nick Foles has been throwing under pressure. So while, yes, you might get a few more positive plays on the ground, he is not a good passer when he's pressured, and you're correct in pointing out that that is not a good offensive line. I don't see him upgrading that offense. I'm not saying Nick Foles has been great. I'm really not. But Mitch Trubisky is not an improvement.
Marcus first, and then Dan, you jump.
Hey, Ailes, Dan been on that yak today. I'm convinced.
It's he could have been.
He done had a day full of yak.
I hadn't been close enough to him
crazy
to find out.
First of all, Mitchell Trubisky is credited with 3 wins, but it's really 2 because Nick Foles had to actually come in
right
and win the game against the Atlanta Falcons. That's number one. The next thing is, Mitch Trubisky been athletic. And guess what he been to? Bad. That's the reason they brought Nick Foles in. Listen, I'm not saying Nick Foles is great. That is not what I'm saying. But this man has had this team. Look, the Saints went to overtime. We obviously know how dominant the Rams were in that game. And they beat the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, the team that we're really putting up there as one of the better teams in the NFC. This was about Nick Foles. And to your point, like, he's turned the football over. I get that. But he's also been steady enough not to give games away and not have them in position to win some of these games. Don't go back to Mr. Trubisky, Matt Nagy, please. We already know
I'm
what
go
he
Ryan
is.
Clark on him.
Oh, no.
I'm going to go Ryan Clark on you. I'm going RC on you. How has he been steady enough? How has he been steady enough? He's doing the one thing. Like, listen, if Nick Foles was doing, like, getting the ball out of his hands and not hurting the team with the turnovers, I'd be all with you. I love Nick Foles. But here's the thing. The coaching staff has to look at the team and go, what's the best way for us to win games? Scoring 17 a game ain't going to cut it, guys. It's not going to cut it. And that's what they're doing with Nick right now.
And Mitch Trubisky's going to score more than that?
If they use him the right way.
That's what I'm waiting on Twitter.
If they use him the right way.
It's too late.
If they use him the right way.
Ryan Fitzpatrick. That was the right answer.
And listen, if that was an option, I'd agree with you. But if they use him the right way. Guys, quarterback run in football was invented to help lesser offenses. You only got to make three blocks, not five. Marcus, here's the thing. You can't sit here and tell me as long like Nick Foles isn't hurting the team or he's operating better. He's not.
All right.
He's not.
I would like to nominate the sentence that they should go back to Mitchell Trubisky for things we never thought we would say in 2020. But then again, it is 2020, so you just never know what might be said anywhere. Yeah.
Tired of ads interrupting your favorite sports podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts. Enjoy shows like First Take, Pardon the Interruption, and The Low Post, available ad-free and uninterrupted. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or go to amazon.com/ESPNpods. That's amazon.com/ESPNpods to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Lamar Jackson, not his best game against the Steelers. It was a great AFC North battle, or at least chalked up to be that way, but he turned over the football too many times. Career-high 4 turnovers. He took responsibility after the game, saying that the loss was on him, and his wideout Hollywood Brown took to Twitter following that loss, Sunday writing, "What's the point of having soldiers when you never use them? Never." Now, that tweet has since been deleted. So the QB coming off the 4 game, the star wide receiver disgruntled. They didn't make any moves before the trade deadline. Dan, how much does not adding a wide receiver to this offense hurt the Ravens?
Zero, because they don't need a wide receiver. They need a tight end. Go back to last year. This is what made them special. 3 tight ends. You see 2 on the right. 1 is on the left. You can't see it in the screen. So you got to play man-to-man coverage because you're committed to stopping the run with big bodies. Now you got Mark Ingram on a wheel route, and you could just send those tight ends vertical. It's all about creating picks, creating havoc and traffic for that defense. Look how easy this is for Lamar. You know what the defense is in because they have to match that personnel, and you could just throw a rail route up the sideline for an easy touchdown. This is something that made them different last year because they were pass-catching threats. But then you could put them in the game, that same 3 tight end set, and you're like, okay, defense, are they going to throw the ball? Is it going to be part of this run action? Because those 3 tight ends could be pass catchers, but they also could be run blockers. That's like having 8 offensive linemen on the field. 8 offensive linemen on the field. You can have them lead blocking. Now you've got a guy that's athletic enough but physical enough to play on the edge, and you can get your playmaking kind of special player, Lamar Jackson, out in space. And listen, lesser athletes now have to go tackle him downfield, run downfield with one of the most electric players in the NFL. So for me, it's not the wide receivers. They miss having that special 3 tight end group that made them different last year.
Dan, we've been hard on you today.
Yeah, yeah.
So I'm excited to now support you, my friend, and say that you're absolutely correct. And it's a very good point.
No,
I do think they could use a wide receiver. I do want to say that. But I think you're absolutely spot on about the tight ends. And when I dug into the numbers, it was borne out statistically. The Ravens went from using 13 personnel, so those 3 tight end sets, at the 5th highest rate to the 5th lowest this season.
Okay.
When they did that last year, and you might be thinking, well, Hayden Hurst, who they traded away, how much production did he really have? How important was he to that offense? But as Dan just pointed out, his mere presence on the field changed the numbers in both the passing and the running game. When they were in 13 last year, they had 16 touchdowns, a 76% completion percentage, and Lamar averaged nearly 10 yards an attempt.
Wow.
Explosive pass plays that all went out the window when they lost that tight end. I agree with you, Dan. They could use another one.
And a girl.
Stop it, Dan.
And a girl.
Y'all can give me all the numbers. We knew this was a good offense last year. And they still ended up right where they're going to end up at this year if they don't have a threat on the outside. Listen, we all knew how prolific the Baltimore Ravens were with the three tight end system, but there's a reason they got away from it. Now, the reason that they got away from it should have been to expand, evolve, creativity, continue to add a number one wide receiver out there like every other contender for a Super Bowl has. They are stockpiling them to try to win a Super Bowl. Russell Wilson has a number one receiver. Tom Brady has three damn near number one receivers. We talking about all of the teams that they have to compete against. The New Orleans Saints have a number one receiver. Don't get me started on the Kansas City Chiefs. The Baltimore Ravens had three tight ends last year. And where were they watching the Super Bowl at, Dan Orlovsky and Mina Kimes? Right there with us. That's where they were. They better go out and try to find a wide receiver somewhere and somebody that can dominate a game on the outside.
Once again, the trade deadline passes today at 4 p.m. and nothing happening for the Ravens and other contenders. Time for one more thing before we go. Mina Kimes, go.
Oh, boy, the Chiefs posted a video of their own players dancing, swag surfing. We can't play the song, but I just want you to imagine it. I mean, the utter disrespect in this video, it's during the game. The Jets are on the field, but I'm here to say a couple things. When you are winning and you are this dominant, you're allowed to be this disrespectful. Okay, the Jets, by the way, you did this to the Bills 3 years ago when you were winning. Also, Chris Jones, can I give him an honorary big man ballin' shout out?
Yes, big man dance.
Marcus, let me see you dance like that.
Yeah, Marcus is dancing. Honorary. By the way, you guys are twins. And shout out to Tip Orlovsky for seeing Marcus this morning on Get Up and setting out Dan's outfit and punking him so we would match Marcus on the show today. Tip, we're going to go. We love it.
Who wore it better? Tell us on Twitter.